Raymond M. Binkowski is not a physician or registered dietitian. The contents of this should not be taken as medical advice. It's not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any health problem, nor is it intended to replace the advice of a physician. Always consult your physician or qualified health professional on any matters regarding your health. If you're interested in learning more about the content in this podcast, webinar, or episode, click the link in the description or comments to learn more.
So I think it would be great if you start off by tell us where the world of supplements are today. Where has it been? Where is it now? Where is the industry as a whole?
So the supplement industry is I think the easiest way to explain it as an industry is continuously growing. And part of that is sometimes founded, sometimes unfounded optimism on a product that is naturally occurring in nature, being able to solve our problems, being able to make pain go away, being able to improve your quality of life, help you drop pounds, drop inches. And for that reason, I think it's an industry that will perpetually grow. Without knowing what the actual industry annual revenue numbers are over the last, say, 50, 60, 70 years, I can say with confidence that there probably has not been a year that's been a loser for the industry. Mm-hmm. Now, what one thing that when we talk supplements, like what are they? In a nutshell, they're not drugs. And what they really do is provide a level of convenience or give you an opportunity to maybe reach a goal or make something happen a little faster. That's going to be most of them. Now, if we're talking of like vitamins and minerals, and let's say that somebody is vitamin D deficient, like this time of year in the Midwest, winter, lack of sunshine, lack of outdoor activities, vitamin D from the sun can be absorbed in humans. Well, without that absorption, it's possible to be vitamin D deficient. Now, in that case, supplementing with vitamin D can help you feel better. If you're deficient in the B vitamins increase red blood cells circulate oxygen. If you're deficient in vitamin B as in boy, you could be lethargic. You could be tired. And by supplementing with vitamin B, you could see that improve. So there's really, you know, there's you're buying convenience with a quality supplement. There's, you might be able to attain a goal a little bit faster with a supplement, or there are cases, not all, but there are cases that are legitimate where if you are vitamin D deficient and you raise your vitamin D levels to what would be healthy normal for you, you can feel better. Same thing with vitamin B. So there's kind of three ways to look at supplements.
Mm-hmm. And so if anyone's a regular consumer of the news, I think that at some point they've probably seen some piece of information about a lawsuit being brought against, I won't name a company today, but being brought against either a supplement company or a distributor. What are those lawsuits typically for? And why is that something that people should pay attention to?
Boy, without having a conversation about an existing instance of a lawsuit, it's hard to say because it's going to be pure speculation. It could be something was in the product that shouldn't have been, right? Currently, like in the headlines last week in the media, and it had been shared a number of times on social media. I've seen it numerous places on social media. So some friends, some family members, some organizations, I've seen the same news piece, which talks about some supplements having a high amount of heavy metals. Is that true? Yeah, it definitely could be. Can that be a case for a lawsuit in litigation? Well, of course it could. But I haven't gone and looked into it. I recall a similar case scenario about 20 years ago. Consumer Reports had done something on ready-to-drink protein shakes. Ready-to-drink RTDs mean they come out of a refrigerator, single serving. It's kind of like a can of pop or a bottle of Gatorade, except it's a bottle of protein shake or a can of protein. They had found some heavy metals, some different things in them, but cause for concern. But when I looked at the amount of those same things in local water, drinking water supplies, they weren't terribly off. So yes, those things were there, but in fairness, what other products that we consume on a daily basis have the same issue? And it's really hard to know that because, you know, people want to stop the scroll on social media. The news wants to grab attention. They want to hold it. And if we say something sensational, people are going to stop and pay attention. But it's worth saying, well, okay, but what are those same things, levels, and other things that are regularly consumed across the United States? So I think you need to look bigger picture. But as far as the actual incidents, it would or examples of lawsuits and litigation, we would need to cite a specific example. Two that come to mind. One was a fat loss product that caused kidney damage in liver damage, and people were going to the emergency room. So that was a case of an unregulated ingredient that was being consumed by humans in amounts that might promote fat loss, but was terribly unsafe for vital organs. That there was lawsuit around that. There were litigation, I don't know if maybe lawsuit over some products that had common stimulants in them. And that led to products being taken off the market. And in that case, was the stimulant the problem? We could argue the merits of that, but at what point is there some type of responsibility or onus upon the consumer that maybe looked at it and said, if one is good, certainly three is better. So if one scoop is what they say, I'm going to take three. And did the problem happen because of three scoops, or was it because one scoop's bad for everybody? I don't know. But I think the lawsuits and litigations, I think the consumer needs to read more into it.
Okay. And so, why is the supplement industry regulated by any entity? How does the novice consumer of supplements navigate a world where they don't necessarily know what companies to trust or what brands to trust?
Yeah, so supplements aren't regulated. They're not drugs. And as such, there's not much government involvement, which can go both ways. That can be a bad thing and a good thing. I see it as a good thing. But that also means that the consumer needs to be an educated consumer, and they need to be their own best advocate. If I'm looking to buy a product, I'm going to look and see, is that a, you know, does that company look like they're brand new and only selling stuff on the internet? If the answer is yes, I'm probably not buying their product. If a company has been around for decades and you see them on the shelf at large chain stores, and yes, they've got a presence on the internet, that's a okay, then that company is probably going to be reputable. And there are like good manufacturing processes, certifications that supplement companies get, but that doesn't speak to the safety, the validity of the product, or anything else. It just says that they were made with good manufacturing processes.
So I think it would be great if we go through a few different broad goals that some of the listeners may have, things that they really want to see improvement on or feel better with.
Yes. So, sorry. I need one more prop.
Okay. So I think it would be great if we go through some of those broad goals that listeners may have, and you can talk about what supplements you think are worth discussing, why, and what they do. So let's start off with first, we're going to start slow. Let's go over sleep. We'll get to ump. We'll go over sleep, recovery, anything along those lines. What supplements do you love when you have the goal of helping your body recover or sleeping better?
Let's go back and chat protein first.
Okay, fine. All right. So we're going to start with protein. I feel like if there is one supplement that is the most widely consumed, I actually just had protein powder this morning, even though I don't actually even take it that often. So it's a little bit ironic that I had some today, but I had protein powder to start my day. My husband is a regular consumer, and I would say a good majority of Americans maybe have at least tried some form of protein. What kind of proteins do you love and why? And what is the goal of protein powder?
And that's why I think it's worth starting with protein. I think a conversation about protein first is because it's something most people have experience with. And when we look at a protein powder, well, why take protein? When I look at clients that we coach and we help make better food choices around the foods they enjoy in a way that allows them to reach their goals, you know, whatever it is, get on bodybuilding stage, look great at the beach. Whatever it is, when we have a conversation about protein, if they're brand new and we tell them you need to eat around 1 gram of protein per pound body weight, they start looking at how much protein they're eating and then they immediately look at it and say, oh my gosh, I'm barely getting half. And that ends up for people that are brand new for 20 plus years, it ends up being most people are getting around half of the amount of protein that they probably should be. Myself included, when I started out doing this back in the mid 90s, I had no idea what foods contain protein. I had no idea how much protein I should get. And in conversation, it was pointed out what I should get, and I was getting about half. So most people are unaware of where to get protein. They're unaware of how little they're consuming relative to how much they need to. And with a quality protein powder, what they're buying is convenience. So, and this is going to be true of any products that are a supplement. Supplements aren't going to make up for the work you didn't do in the gym and your poor choices at a restaurant, in the kitchen, or the grocery store. What they are going to do is supplement your life. In the case of protein powder, what you're buying is convenience. You're buying a portable, you're buying a relative inexpensive way to get an adequate amount of protein on a daily basis. And it happens to come flavored in like chocolate, vanilla, strawberry. So that's, you know, with protein powder, you're buying convenience. That's the biggest thing, is you're getting a convenient way to hit the target amount of protein you should be getting on a daily basis. Now, with like types of protein, the whey protein is probably the most common. It's quickly digested. Now, many companies use a low-grade sweet dairy whey. And as a result, individuals that often happen to be lactose intolerant, and even individuals that aren't lactose intolerant, they don't tolerate those lower cost, lower grade sweet dairy whey. And they get gas, they get cramping, they get things of that nature. But a quality whey protein is going to mix easy, it's going to mix thin, and it shouldn't upset your stomach. And the whey proteins are digested quickly. So they theoretically, they're best right after you train. And when I say best right after you train, like, we were talking offline that you're getting ready to run a half marathon. So the days you do a run, you should have a shake after you run. If an athlete plays volleyball, and let's say she has volleyball practice, when she's done practicing, she should probably be having some protein. And again, convenience is what is going to be afforded you by buying a protein powder. But whey is probably the most common. It's going to be quickly digested. Theoretically, it is better post-workout than other powder proteins. Like UMP, which is what I use, is a blend of protein powders, all derived from animal sources, all derived typically from dairy. But because it's got a blend of protein sources, it's going to digest slower and it's going to stick with you longer. And the blended proteins are typically going to mix thicker. Now we can have a lengthy argument, debate, conversation about whey protein, isolated whey, hydrolyzed whey, all of those things. We could argue and talk about whey protein is absolutely the best protein after you finish a workout. And those things would be true. But that being said, we've seen great success anecdotally with clients for the last 20 some years, using either a whey or a like casein blended type of protein product after they train. I've not seen this person gets this much better results by using this whey protein after they work out instead of having that blended protein. And you'll see marketing will say whey after you work out and that blended casein protein before bed. And there's truth, there's some support research wise for that. But really, at the end of the day, choose what you like the taste of, choose what fits your pocketbook, and don't buy things that upset your stomach. If your stomach's upset, it's because it's a cheap protein.
Okay. And if someone does need a plant-based protein powder for various reasons, allergies or, dietary restrictions, anything like that, or choices, do you have a favorite plant-based protein or one that you believe to be more effective?
Not really. So if an individual is plant-based and there could be for various reasons because they're vegetarian, they're vegan or whatever it might be, the plant-based proteins, so there's what's called the biological value of protein, and that's kind of like the score as to how much of that protein is absorbed and assimilated by the human body and used for tissue repair and growth. For the most part, your dairy-based proteins have a higher biological value. So more of that supplemental protein is going to be used for tissue repair and growth in comparison to vegetarian or in comparison to your plant-based protein sources. Now, that being said, I've had vegetarian, I've had vegan all over the board clients, and they'll favor or only use the plant-based products. And in their case, I tell them, search for the product you like the taste of, search for what your digestive tract will tolerate, and search for what fits your pocketbook. Now, in that case, some of the vegetable proteins are going to come up short in a branched chain amino acids. So those individuals probably will benefit from supplementing with branched chain amino acids in addition to the protein powder they're using. And sometimes you can find a plant-based protein that has additional, I believe it's leucine, isoleucine, added to the product to make up for the fact that it doesn't have as much of the branched chain amino acids as the animal-based products do.
Okay. So in we'll go over UMP then as an example. How many grams of protein is in one or two scoops of UMP?
Usually around 20 grams per scoop. Depends on some of the flavors might have a slightly different density and
Oh, we
volume
got the
of
glasses
powder.
out.
We do, otherwise I'm never going to read this label. So it's the vanilla, which is what I happen to grab from my office, is 22.4 grams of protein per scoop. And I would tell almost everybody to do two scoops. And it's
Okay.
got milk protein isolate, whey protein concentrate, calcium caseinate, whey protein isolate, micellar caseinine, L-arginine, L-glutamine, L-isoleucine, L-leucine, and L-valine. So it has additional branched chain amino acids along with glutamine. And it does, because it is a blended protein, it is going to mix thicker than like a straight whey protein would.
Okay. So for someone like myself, I weigh about 150 pounds right now, so hopefully this is semi-relatable for some of the listeners. That would knock out about 40 grams of my protein for the day,
Correct.
correct? And so if my goal is to be at 150 grams, if I wasn't doing those two easy scoops of protein powder, how else am I getting 40 grams worth of protein? What adds up to about 40 grams?
What would add up? So a 6 ounce can of tuna fish and water, which they don't sell anymore during the recession, they changed the amount of tuna in the same size can to 5 ounces. But 6 ounce can of tuna used to be 32 grams. There's 3 grams of protein in an egg white. There's 7 grams of protein in a whole egg. Then,
Okay.
depending on how many, well, say 4 ounces of white fish, say tilapia, is going to be 100 calories, 25 grams of protein. And then your chicken breast, your chicken legs, chicken thighs, turkey, any beef, pork, it's going to vary depending on the size of the serving. So you're going to be looking at, if you are an omnivore, meaning you eat plants and animal-based foods or diet, any of the animal-based proteins are going to vary depending upon the serving size, the amount of fat. In the plant-based world, so like your soy and things of that nature, it's going to depend on what the vegetable source is, like a pea protein and things of that nature.
Okay. And it sounds like someone could start by sitting down, really trying to get a grasp of how much protein they're currently consuming, but then they could right away know that I can offset 5 or 6 eggs, a couple of chicken breasts by just doing your 2 scoops of protein and actually getting your protein to a good place. And that's how you could even determine whether or not you need a protein supplement.
Correct. Or, like I had said, if you look at a 150 pound individual, let's say the target's 150 grams, 2 scoops of most protein powders are going to be around 40 or 45 grams of protein. That's 30% of your daily protein requirement. And when we look at, like I had said, most people, the brand new to any of this, 150 pound adult is probably getting 75 or 80 grams of protein currently. That's it. And when you tell them and they look at the numbers, they're like, this is impossible. And when you say, well, if you introduce, you have just 1 2-scoop shake a day, you're going to add 40 or 45 grams to that 80 grams. And you just got an awfully lot closer to your target. And now that target's within reach. Oftentimes, and this is the feedback I get, they're like, by adding just 1 2-scoop protein shake a day, I actually see that I could eat enough protein to get to my target. Whereas before I looked at it, it was like, my gosh, how am I going to double the amount? Like, this is impossible. It's not impossible. You can certainly do it with whole food, but for people that are brand new and they don't know that there's 7 grams of protein in the average size, medium or large egg. Like, I know that because I've been doing this for decades. They don't even know where to start. And when they look at, geez, I got to go from 75 to 150, that's impossible. But if you say, hey, listen, you're at 75, but we can add 45 terribly conveniently, now you're at 120. Now it's a conversation about, oh, what can I do to get 30 more grams? Now they start seeing it as something they can do.
Okay, that's perfect. So you talked about utilizing whey protein specifically after workouts. What else do you really love for your clients to utilize post-workout? And what does it take for you re to recommend something like that?
So, I mean, the biggest thing is you need to have protein after you train. Research suggests that it's better if you pair it with carbohydrates. I di ideally in liquid form within 30 minutes of ending your workout, and then like 30 minutes after that, have a meal. Now, that's all theoretical, and that works in theory in the faux world. In the real world, sometimes people are like, listen, I've got this much time to work out, and I got to get a shower, and you said I need to have some protein. I need to be able to do that in the car while I'm on my way to work. So the idea that we're going to pair carbs and protein after they train 30 minutes after they worked or workout ended, and then they're going to have a meal 30, it's impossible. It doesn't work in the real world. So at minimum, having that shake after you train is going to do a lot for you. If you can pair it with some carbohydrates, it's going to do more. And if you can have a regular food meal like 30 minutes after that, it's going to be even better for you. But those are the basic, you know, that is the basic recommendation. Now, if you have somebody that is looking at, maybe they want to be a professional bodybuilding competitor. Now, for them, the little things start to matter a lot. And that individual's goals are going to be different than somebody that's in their late 40s, early 50s. And just wants to get rid of the spare tire or wants to manage the weight they've been gaining with menopause. And they've got a short window. They're going to work out, shower at the gym, then drive to work or get on the train to work. That person just have the shake and move on. That elite athlete, separate conversation.
And what kind of carbohydrate sources would you recommend someone utilizing and pairing with? Does that mean grab a bagel for your car ride to work? Does that mean fruit, vegetables?
So, like, again, theoretically, probably something that's sweetened with dextrose, which is similar to glucose, which invites a discussion of where can I find dextrose. Regular Gatorade, the non-G2, non-G0 Gatorades have dextrose. Some other sports drinks like that will have dextrose. Beverly International makes a product called Mass Maker, which is two or three parts carbohydrate to one protein. So that, and it's a blend of carbohydrate sources. So you get immediate release absorption of carbs. So a quick increase in blood sugar, but then you get a sustained breakdown and gradual increase in blood sugar over time. But really, like if somebody wants to keep it simple, just have a shake and a piece of fruit. Now we can argue if the fruit's sweetened with fructose, that's not going to do much for glucose and ensuing glycogen and whatever, but you know, unless you're an elite athlete, we don't need to make it more complicated. If we start making it complicated, you're not going to do it.
Okay. So talk to me more about other supplements that you utilize for recovery. What do you love and why?
So, and this is so protein's buying convenience, and from experience, most people are coming up short on the amount of protein they need to recover. The next thing is the human body is not going to work well if it's deficient in vitamins and minerals. So quality one a day multivitamin mineral, it's the way I read it back in the 90s is vitamins and minerals are like the spark in the old Zippo lighter. So you had the spark, you had the wick, and you had the butane, right? And the flint provided the spark. No spark, no flame. So even if the lighter is full, if you don't have a spark, you can't make a flame. So vitamins and minerals are important. Back to like the vitamin D, back to the vitamin B. The body is not going to work as well as it should if you're deficient in key vitamins and minerals. So a quality one a day multivitamin and mineral makes a lot of sense for pretty much everybody. And that, like, if you don't have the basics met, it's really hard for the body to invest in tissue repair, let alone growth, which is recovery, right? So you've got to get enough vitamins and minerals.
So I'm going to pause on the vitamins before you move on. That ironically is an area where I have major trust issues because if I even like pulled up my Target app right now, there would be like a $40 range in what I can spend minimum probably. There's probably a bigger gap than that if I really look, but there can be a $40 difference in what I would spend on a monthly multivitamin. And on top of it, all of them are marketed to act like they're going to do everything I could possibly need, and they're so good. How do you choose your multivitamin and why?
So, this is a super pack by Beverly International. And a version, if I remember correctly, of this has been around since 1967. So, how do you know if it's any good? If it was garbage, if it was snake oil, it wouldn't be around for almost 60 years. And this is around $30 or less on the internet. So that, you know, that's one way to look at it. A lot of the other, you know, many of the commercial products, they're one pill. The super pack, there's like a dozen small pills in individual serving bags. As an example, it has naturally occurring vitamin E. Synthetic vitamin E's are toxic if you take too much. This has D-alpha-tocopherol version of vitamin E. It has digestive enzymes, which are important for gut health, which are important for nutrient absorption. Instead of using an enteric coating on the hard one-a-day pills, it's using alfalfa to introduce carbon, which increases the absorption. So there's a lot of things like that are going to be hard for the average consumer to understand and weed through because there's so many options. But again, when you have a product that's been on the market since the late 1960s, relatively unchanged, if it was garbage, it would have went out and been replaced in the 70s. Yet here we are.
And do you purchase Beverly yourself?
I do.
So you're not sponsored by them. This isn't a
No, so in fairness,
forced endorsement. I think it's important for people to hear that though. You love them because you love them, not because you're getting paid or anything like that.
Correct. It's what I take. It's what I sold when we had our gym. And I sold other products like the ready to drink protein drinks and energy drinks, stuff like that. But from a take home and use over the next couple of weeks supplement, Beverly was pretty much the only brand we carried. And it's the only, like, my kids take it, my wife takes it, I take their products.
Yep, same actually, because of you, but it's one of the only companies that I've ever spent money on, so it's a big deal.
Yeah, and I'm not compensated by them.
Okay, so continue then. We went on a small
So
tangent for
vitamin, yeah,
5 minutes, but
vitamins and
what
mineral
else?
protein powder, convenience. Vitamins and minerals, if we don't have the spark, we don't have the flame. So we want to make sure that all of the micronutrients, which is what vitamins and minerals are, we want to make sure those demands are satisfied. We don't want to be deficient. And even so, one time I did something for a reserve unit of the US Navy in the field. I was invited to come speak. So I went to speak. One of my clients invited me. Somebody asked about vitamins and minerals. She said, "Oh, I actually have mine in my car." She went and got them. A nurse practitioner or a master's of science nursing, whoever officer in the group grabbed the box, read the label, and said, "There is 2,222% of the vitamin C in here. This isn't good, blah, 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 blah." And I said, "Well, I said, raise your hand if you know where we get the percent RDA from. Because I believe it's the minimum to prevent scurvy and rickets. Do any of you know anybody that's ever had scurvy and rickets? Because I don't either. Like, we used to get that when we traveled by boat across sea for weeks or months on end. We don't have those deficiencies anymore. And vitamin C is water soluble. So the body's going to safely take what it needs and pass the rest. So there's no downside to having extra vitamin C." But the protein powder and then your vitamins and minerals, that's kind of going to be the foundation. And the protein's not necessary. But again, back to that 150 pound person that's trying to hit 150 gram protein target, they don't even really know what foods have protein. They're already getting at most about half of what they should be. That protein powder is a really convenient way to get where you want to go in terms of adequate dietary protein on a consistent basis. So those are those two products, or types of supplemental products. And again, supplements aren't meant to replace a healthy lifestyle that includes making the right choices in the kitchen, the grocery store, out at a restaurant, dining out, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And so, two supplements that I would love for you to hit on and talk about what they're used for and why. Creatine and then branched chain amino acids or BCAAs. Are those utilized for recovery, performance, and who needs to be purchasing something like that?
So creatine monohydrate is the form of creatine if you are going to use creatine that you want to take. So all of these other manipulated names, play on names, types of creatine, typically when I see a company that's doing that, it raises a red flag. Creatine monohydrate is the creatine you want. It's today, many say it's the most researched supplement. So we've done more research on creatine monohydrate than any other supplement, if that statement's true. Creatine monohydrate is an instant gratification or short amount of time gratification product. Most people, within a couple weeks of using creatine monohydrate, if they're brand new to it, if they've never taken it, will notice performance benefits in the weight room or in their sport. They'll notice they lift more weight. They notice they lift more weight for more reps. You'll notice that, hey, I couldn't do this before and now I can. And it's rather instant. It doesn't take long to realize that benefit. And so creatine, because it does increase fluid uptake in the muscle, it can be considered something that's going to facilitate recovery. It's also, again, most studied supplement, most researched. They're finding uses for it for elderly individuals and cognitive decline because of its ability to provide energy. Like speaking in generic, basic, watered down layman's terms, its ability to help the brain better utilize energy. There's research, like one of my children just suffered a concussion. There's research in its use post-concussion for the brain and recovery for the same reasons. So it's easily the most researched supplement under the sun, and it offers benefits beyond just the weight room, benefits beyond the track, the court, or the field.
And so talk about branched chain amino acids or BCAAs.
So branched chain amino acids play a significant role in tissue repair and growth. And if you're deficient, the body's going to struggle to repair. And that you can't build a larger muscle if you haven't repaired it, right? So through training, through weight training, through exercise, we break a muscle down and the body responds by repairing it and building it back a little bit stronger. And if you're deficient in branched chain amino acids, particularly leucine, isoleucine, you're going to compromise the ability to recover. And if you can't, and then grow larger, right? So you have to get those from your diet or you're not going to recover. Now, that being said, having known personally, they're friends of mine. Some of the people that were at the front of the BCAA industry, and when people call them BCAAs, it drives me bananas because it's like, do you know what that four-letter acronym stands for? And they're like, what do you mean? They're BCAAs. They're like, no, they're branched chain amino acids and they have names and you don't know them and you didn't know what branched chain amino acids are or were, but it's what's in that fluorescent bottle of stuff you're drinking. Yes, the research says if you're deficient, it's going to shortchange your recovery and growth. However, if an individual is consuming adequate protein, so back to the 150 grams, if you're getting 150 grams of protein, if you're using a quality protein post-workout, if your other dietary protein food sources come from maybe you have some eggs, you have some chicken, you have some beef, or if you're plant-based, maybe you're pea protein, soy protein, or whatever, and they do have the branched chains, you probably don't need a branched chain amino acid product. So they're starting to find that if you are getting enough protein from a variety of sources throughout the day and you're having protein after training, you the demand for additional branched chain amino acids isn't as great. So a lot of the people that are eating protein-rich meals 4, 5, 6 times a day, they're having that post-workout shake protein, hopefully with some carbohydrates, right? They're probably not going to get as much benefit from the branched chain amino acid product as somebody that's not doing those things. Now, so where I'm going with that, you can save your money. You probably don't need the fluorescent pink, green, yellow, purple, blue drink during your workout at the gym. Now, that being said, it's low calorie, and if somebody enjoys the taste of it and whatever, there's no downside to it. It's a expense, it's a cost, it's something you spend money on that may not offer a ton of return, but there's not really a downside to it.
I think ironically, the only time that I've ever taken branched chain amino acids was when I was still working for you. I was on the floor training a ton. So of course you're physically active, busy, and you never really sit down, which was my favorite part, but very active. You're up and moving. So probably not doing as good of a job as I could have done with nutrition. But I had this terrible boss that was making me work all the time, stuff like that. And I was prepping for a show. So I was training really, really hard once I was done with work. And I was getting to a point where things that should have started feeling better, I was shaky for, and like I wasn't seeing the same improvements. And you had recommended, you could try something like this, it might help. And it actually did. And I did start feeling better. But that's always kind of shifted my view for branched chain amino acids is there's a lot of people that are spending money on something that maybe they don't physically need. Like
Right.
I can't
So,
imagine how many steps I was taking a day, what my daily caloric burn was, anything like that. But it took a lot for me to get to a point where I was like, I need something, you know, to
and if
help.
you corrected that, like if we corrected lifestyle, if we made sure that we were in positive nitrogen balance, because you were consuming protein regularly throughout the day, you weren't on your feet all day, you weren't skipping lunch, skipping a break. All of those things, then the need or the demand for the supplemental branched chain amino acids in all likelihood would be less. So it's not that there's not a case for them. It's just that if you walk into a large chain gym today, a lot of the people of a certain age are all going to be drinking branched chain amino acids, and they have no idea why, yet alone have they considered if it's even worthwhile. But again, there's no downside. Like I have a female figure competitor client right now. She likes drinking branched chain amino acids. Like it's just kind of like her go-to drink. There's no downside. Does she have to? Probably not because of what her diet is like. But is she getting a ton of benefit? No. But she likes it. She has the budget for it. So go with it and don't worry about it.
Okay, perfect. So we'll switch back to big goals and what can help you reach them. We'll start before the workout. What do you like for stimulants pre-workout? Does anyone need them, or is that strictly a want?
I think it's in the last 25, 30 years, pre-workout something has been popularized by supplement companies with a product to sell. And in the 90s, that product was ephedra, caffeine, and aspirin. Or a product, a powder would typically in tablet. At the end of the 90s, they were in liquid, an energy drink form, or a powdered product like Ultimate Orange. And they were high in stimulants. It did have both caffeine and ephedra, and then aspirin in the ECA products. So the companies were marketing that. Import performance did improve in the gym. Like there was support. There was data that said if you take this and then go lift weights, you lift more weights. Well, of course you're going to, you're taking a stimulant. So that's where a lot of the pre-workout stuff started. Now, the ephedra that was available in the 90s is gone, to my knowledge. Like different forms and versions have come back out, but it's not what we were using in the 90s. And personally, for me, and this is my opinion, like my pre-workout's coffee today. And I think that's more than enough. And the idea that you need a strong pre-workout, a lot of the people that are big on the pre-workouts would benefit from being equally big on doing the hard work in the gym. Right? It's kind of what the in crowd is using, just like the branched chain amino acid drinks, the powder, fluorescent powders in the water bottle. It's what everybody's doing, so everybody's doing it, and you're going to do it because everybody else is doing it, and they don't know why they're doing it, but everybody's doing it. So we end up in that group think, that group, everyone's doing it, therefore we must. But I don't think pre-workouts are necessary. If you want to have an honest conversation about the research, sure, if you use stimulants before you weight train, you're going to lift more weight. You're going to run faster. You're probably going to run faster longer. Is it a requirement? No, it's not. And then there's a conversation that with the use of stimulants needs to be had. The longer you take them, the more you need to take of them to get the same benefit. So your body will adapt and adjust, and you won't get the big hit of energy on leg day that you used to if you've been taking that pre-workout every day before you train. And typically, what happens is people will start taking a pre-workout before they hit the gym. And then pretty soon they take it on their off days, and then pretty soon they take it every day, and then pretty soon they're not noticing it anymore. So they start, again, if one's good, three's better.
I think there's something to be said too for that little placebo bump that I get from coffee, so I can relate to an extent. I don't think I've ever had pre-workout a day in my life. But coffee does the same thing for me. But I think part of it is it feels like that slap in the snot box, like, okay, here we
Well,
go. It's habitual too.
whether it's placebo or not, like athletes will train harder with stimulants. It's just the way it is. And if you're taking a lot of stimulants, your performance in the gym will be improved. But if you ask, like, what do I personally use? Coffee. I'll have 2 glasses of coffee, maybe three, and then I'll lift weights in the morning. And that's it. It's more than enough. And back when I started weight training, I didn't drink coffee. I never had caffeine. And then I started taking ephedra, caffeine, and aspirin. And like the amount of energy I had was ridiculous. But in time, you adapt, in time, you adjust. And in time, you're not getting that benefit anymore. And then if you don't have it, you have a headache, you're extremely lethargic. So it just compounds and you end up taking more and more. And that was with ephedra that probably, if abused, taken more than you should have it. It wasn't as bad as some of the stimulants that followed. I'm not gonna name by name, but certainly there were stimulants that came out after that that were far worse. And in fairness to ephedra, like ephedra has been used for 2,000 plus years in Chinese medicine. It's a bronchodilator. That's why it's in cold medicine. It does offer some health benefits, especially somebody fighting like an upper respiratory infection. It did work, and it probably, if you took one, I'm making up the number, right? If you took one, it's probably fine. The problem is, especially with the adolescent males in the weight room, if one's good, three certainly must be better. And that's what everybody was doing. But on the surface, I would say it's probably safe. Some of the stimulants that followed, probably not safe.
And with something like a pre-workout powder or something like that, what are the real performance benefits that you are going to see? Is it increased blood flow? Like, what is going to actually boost you in the moment?
Kind of the foundation of a lot of what would be labeled as a pre-workout today is stimulants. So it's going to be chemical energy. And with that chemical energy, you can lift more weight, run harder, longer, right? There are going to be things like arginine that is a vasodilator as well. It is going to improve your blood flow. It is going to improve your pump. It will contribute to lifting more weights, but most companies, their pre-workout is built around some type of energy product, some type of stimulant.
So then, looking at overall health, are there any broad supplements that you feel like either by certain age groups or gender or anything like that, that you feel like every person in this category should be taking this?
Yeah, so everybody, like, protein's going to make your life convenient. So the protein powder. And then we look at vitamins and minerals, and vitamins and minerals could arguably go first. But vitamins and minerals are important because, again, no spark, no flame. And you got to have a flame. After that, I think creatine has a lot of upside. It's not a must take. And in 2.5 decades of doing what I do, I know of one person that had adverse effects from taking dietary creatine, as shown by his urine and blood tests. I still have a hard time believing that. So he quit taking it. His doctor said you can't have it. And maybe it's true, maybe it's not. I question whether or not something else was going on. But removing that, creatine makes a lot of sense. We're finding benefits for aging populations. We're finding benefits for post-concussion athletes. And there's definitely a benefit for like 99.9% of the people that take it when it comes to exercise. For the middle-aged male, so individuals over the age of 30, zinc magnesium aspartate or ZMA and Quadricarn. So Quadricarn is a product by Beverly International with four forms of the amino acid L-carnitine. But ZM, and we'll talk about that in a second. ZMA is going to help individuals get a more deep, restful sleep. So it has a positive impact on quality of sleep. And quality of sleep plays a role in everything, circadian rhythm. So your heart health, your ability for tissue repair, for growth, pick something. It, you know, that you have to get a quality night's sleep, or a lot of things with your health and wellness are going to suffer. And ZMA, in addition to that, zinc plays a role in testosterone production. It doesn't mean if you're female, you take zinc, you'll make more testosterone. Probably not likely. I would stop just short of saying impossible, but pretty darn close to impossible. But for adult males, again, if you're deficient, the way I've always explained it is if you're trying to spell the word cat and you have a C and you have a T and you don't have an A, you can't spell cat. So if we're deficient in vitamins and minerals, if we're deficient in leucine or isoleucine, it's really hard for the body to do what it needs to do. It's just like trying to spell cat when you have a C and a T and no A. So inadequate zinc, deficient zinc has been associated with males not. Are bit with males being deficient in testosterone. So ZMA is a great product. It still offers the same sleep benefits for women, but men get the extra benefit of the role zinc plays in natural testosterone production. The amino acid L-carnitine has been shown to have a favorable effect on lipids, so your blood fat, what we call cholesterol. It's also been shown to play a favorable low role in fat loss. And then a combination of four forms of it may exert a positive effect on the hormone receptors in males for male hormones, which means that middle-aged male, it's not just that we're not saying they're going to make more testosterone. We're going to say that at the receptor level, that individual is going to be better able to utilize the testosterone they're naturally making. So middle-aged ZMA, middle-aged males, ZMA and Quadricarn. An arginine product, something like, I'm going to keep citing Beverly International because that's what I use and have for 25 years. Something like Muscle Synergy, which has got 7 grams of arginine per serving. Arginine is a vasodilator, so there's a heart health benefit. There's performance benefits in the gym. It's got HMB. It's got a little bit of creatine. So this is going to be a good product. And then for who? For somebody looking for weight training, performance, athletic performance, improved performance on the track, the court, the field.
So that would
Eight.
include endurance athletes, not just for strength, powerlifting.
Yeah, like I would say it's not. I would have to go and look it if it's been if arginine has been used in endurance athletes. But looking at the role arginine plays in humans, the fact that it's a vasodilator, I mean it that and it's going to improve heart rate theoretically, blood pressure theoretically for an endurance athlete. If you're able to circulate more oxygen, I have to believe there's a benefit. And if you create a larger diameter structure that's circulating blood, I have to believe you're circulating more oxygen. So, yes.
Okay. So anything else for overall health for women specifically then? I know some of those were more leaning towards, male listeners or anyone tuning in. So anything else for women for overall health that you really feel like should be a
I
habitual?
think the omega-3 fats, which are in it, they're going to be for both genders. They're anti-inflammatory. They can improve your cholesterol profile, total cholesterol. They can lower the bad cholesterol, raise the good cholesterol. And then like there's black cohosh, for women that are menopausal, ashwagandha for managing the stress hormone cortisol, phosphatidylserine for women that are finding their cortisol level goes up at 2:30 a.m. and they're wide awake in the middle of the night. Sometimes taking that before bed will help manage that cortisol level and keep it from spiking in the middle of the night.
Good. And anything else then for overall health before we move on?
I don't think so. I think those are the biggest things. And that's why, there's a million products on the market, all promising the impossible. But if you look at the very few number of things we've talked about, many of them really aren't going to fulfill the promise they're making.
So for joint health, I think that this is something for my husband and I that we're getting to a point that we would be a lot more intrigued than we ever have been before. We are 36 and 39, but very
Hard
active.
miles, 36 and 39 with hard miles.
Hard miles.
Both
Good
Division I
miles.
athletes. One was a pro athlete. Lots of heavy weightlifting. Yeah, hard miles.
So for listeners like us that, we're not in our 70s and 80s, we're not arthritic, how divide those up for me a little bit. Like, what things should people be taking right now to help their body in 20 years, to help their physical activity levels right now? And then does that shift at all as we age? Like, okay, and then by age 60, you also need this.
So I wouldn't argue that it's necessarily a chronological age thing as far as your joint health, as far as your joint issues. I'm going to argue that it's in part age, but also what you've done for those years. So if you take both you and Jeff, your husband, we have two individuals that were Division I athletes. So right there, you've got 4 or 5 years of athletics at a level that the average American has never experienced. So if you look at, in your case, volleyball, your time on the court, every rep you took off every serve, every time the ball is volleyed over the net, like those reps cause wear and tear. If you take Jeff in football, every time the ball is snapped, every rep in the weight room for both of you, and every rep in the weight room in a Division I strength training program where you're like we've talked in other podcasts, you're actually training with weights. You're not working out. Like you're all in. You're maxing out. You're training to your true potential. You have a group environment where in this case is a rare time where that group esprit de corps and a strength coach is going to drive you to do things in the gym you wouldn't do on your own. That over X amount of time is going to cause wear and tear. And I don't think it's a matter of when you're 60 or 70. I think for individuals with your background, you probably have more wear and tear than somebody that didn't play sports. Now, there's outliers. There's some folks that will never have an issue. But if we look at the bell curve and we look at the sweet spot of the curve, you're probably going to have a lot more wear and tear than somebody that's 36 and didn't do those things. So proactively today, joint products, and I had a car accident years ago, had to go see an orthopedic surgeon. I asked him about glucosamine and chondroitin, which at the time, those were the two, they were the products. If you're laughing at, because I got these glasses on, I don't even want to hear, see it. It's terrible. By the way, you've been wearing them the whole time. I only need them to read a label.
I have an astigmatism. You're getting older. There's a
Don't make
difference.
your problems mine. So you've been broken from day one. Okay. I asked my orthopedic surgeon, I'm like, hey, this glucosamine chondroitin stuff, does it work? And he said, ironically, if you asked me a couple years back, I would have said no. But I was recently at an orthopedic conference. The president of the orthopedic organization was opening up the conference, doing his keynote. And he said, hey, those of you that know me, no, I used to be an avid golfer. I gave it up because my back, it just couldn't deal with the aches and pains. I gotta tell you, we've all poo-pooed this glucosamine chondroitin stuff. I've been taking it. I'm back to playing golf and I'm pain-free. So glucosamine and chondroitin were used in veterinary medicine for a long time with animals, particularly large breed animal like horses, to manage joint pain. And sitting here today, like it would be hard, you'd be hard pressed to find a middle-aged American that hasn't heard about glucosamine and chondroitin for joint health. So they do work. Glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, hyaluronic acid, those are probably the four things that you want to look for in a joint product. Now, where we start to have an issue, and we didn't cover this with the other products, like creatine monohydrate, you need 5 grams a day. You need 5 grams a day. Why? That's what's been shown in research. And anecdotally, that's when people start noticing benefits. With creatine, if you load it, meaning you take 5 grams 4 or 5 times a day for a week, you just get the benefits of creatine sooner. Shifting gears back to the joint products. If you're going to take glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, and hyaluronic acid, you need to get enough of it per serving. Same thing. Again, I'm going to bounce around with L-carnitine. Like, I believe it's 600 milligrams of L-carnitine per serving, or you won't get a benefit. Many, if not most, L-carnitine products have 150 to 250 milligrams per serving. So, a third of what you need to get a benefit. So, the joint products that have glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, and hyaluronic acid work, but you have to get enough of those ingredients, or it's not going to work. In what And I'm not practicing medicine. I'm not dispensing medical advice. I'm not telling anybody to disregard the advice of their attending physicians. Now, what I can tell you is anecdotally, with this product joint care that I'm holding in my hand that is made by Beverly International, even though it says the serving size is 3 capsules per day, many people do well to take 4 times that amount per day, so 12 per day, until they see an improvement, so a reduction in joint pain, and then start backing the amount you take daily down. And most people are going to arrive at around 4 to maybe 8 per day. And if they take as little as 4, maybe as many as 8 per day, that they can maintain that improvement in joint health. So the pain stays away. But what we've seen is people taking like 12 per day initially for days, and then backing that down seems to offer joint pain relief. And this is going to be something whether you're 36 or you're 70. And I don't,
So what's
again,
the functionality of those different pieces? Like, if someone's sitting at home right now and asking themselves, well, I tore my ACL 10 years ago, I don't know that that's going to help my knee. What joints are they helping and how and why?
so part of it is going to be some of the ingredients are what we see in cartilage, connective tissue, right? Stuff that's in the joint. So you're taking the stuff that's in that tissue. And then the other part of it is a reduction in inflammation. So anything that ends in itis, itis is the Latin suffix for inflammation. So arthritis implies inflammation. So if you can manage and reduce the inflammation, it's going to feel better. If you can provide the raw materials for the tissue in the joint that's damaged while removing the inflammation, not only are you likely to feel better, but it's likely to continue to feel better.
I bet. I think it's actually, well, it's probably more ironic than anything, but I would be curious how many people out there also needed to hear that they need to take the right amounts of stuff, because one of my ridiculous, frugal things that I love to do is actually the multivitamin that I just finished. I was supposed to take 6 a day, and I was like, I'm gonna fly through this bottle if I take 6 a day. So I took 3 a day.
And you
I
got
got
half the benefit
half the
or no
benefit.
benefit at all. Yeah, so you can't price shop. Like, you have to take the amounts that have been shown in research to work. And I tell clients this now, like when they say, well, that's expensive, well, then don't bother buying it. You're not doing yourself any favors by saving money and then taking a product in a manner that won't work. You're better off not buying it. Don't buy it. And along with that, again, to reiterate, supplements are just that, they're supplements. So if you haven't corrected diet and lifestyle, these aren't drugs. It's not a magic bullet. it's just one more tool, but you got to get the food and you got to get the exercise right. Like I had a guy come into the gym once and I knew who he was from the community. I knew he had money and he pulled his credit card out and looked at me and looked at all the Beverly International supplements we sold and said, just give me everything I need for like the month to lose weight. I was like, cool. I would love to take $1,000 from you right now through the cash register, swipe that card, but it's not gonna work. Like we need to talk more about what you're doing with food and what you're doing from an exercise standpoint. So you gotta do those things. Back to the joint health, like this has become popular now and it's easy to find. Like there's a ton of collagen proteins out there. So collagen protein is gonna play a role in joint health. Potentially, right? Again, we can't blanket say this is going to do this for everybody. It's not a drug, but collagen protein is going to do a lot for joint health as well. We saw that back in the early 2000s. I had middle-aged bodybuilding competitors that would have joint pain, discomfort, or sometimes they would have they would tear a muscle or a bicep tendon, and I would have them. I would say, hey, go buy sugar-free instant Jell-O because it's all collagen. And my thought process was, if collagen is found in those tissues that are damaged, maybe supplemental collagen would help with recovery and accelerate the repair process. And we did seem to see that. Now, whether or not it was placebo, I don't know. But sitting here today, 20-some years later, everybody's got a collagen protein, and those are some of the benefits they say you get from collagen. It's also good for your hair. It's good for the thickness of your hair. It's good for your nails, as would protein in general. But a collagen protein and a joint product taken in the amount shown in research is probably what those individuals that are having joint pain and discomfort, many will find benefit from that.
And so important for someone's overall quality of life, too. Like, that's where I think people have to be willing to invest in themselves is when it does come to the long run, and joints have to be at the forefront of that, right? For your mobility to age well, joints can be a huge factor to consider and certainly worth spending your money on too.
Well, and it can cascade, right? So if you're experiencing joint pain and discomfort and you're aging, and as a result of the pain and discomfort, you're doing less and less and less and less and less, pretty soon you could be pretty sedentary. And over time, we know that's a problem. Like we covered this in previous podcasts, you know, the value in weight training, the positive impact on bone density. You know, load-bearing activities, ability to maintain bone density or increase it. Weight training's ability to be used to increase muscle mass and the fact that increased muscle mass raises metabolism. You know, all of these things. And if your joints hurt and you're not doing any of those things, maybe at all, maybe not like you used to because it hurts, at some point that is going to impact quality of life.
Absolutely. So looking at performance, and I feel like there's going to be so many different directions that you can go. Performance enhancing is going to be too broad. So feel free to be more specific for the type of athlete or the type of person. But are there certain things that you recommend to really improve performance? Either for someone that we can blanket it as an athlete, someone that's very physically active, doing very demanding things, even whatever makes it easiest to move forward. But do you recommend any supplements?
Yeah, it's going to go back to kind of what we said, protein, creatine. I do like the arginine type products pre-workout. We had an NFL football player. Beverly International had just come out with their Muscle Synergy. The NFL player had had a shoulder surgery, was just getting released for do whatever you want activity. So back to the weight room, no restrictions type release. We use Muscle Synergy, and within days of returning to the weight room, he was very quickly lifting more and more weight, even though he had a significant layoff from weight training because of the shoulder surgery. So I think the arginine product, so if we laid it out, an ideal case, maybe some type of liquid carbohydrates 30 to 45 minutes before training. And then during the workout, maybe liquid carbohydrates, depending on what it is, depending on the intensity and duration,
Talk to
right?
me more about liquid high carbohydrates, though. What is that? What does that look like?
The most common one that you're going to find or see is going to be like a Gatorade, a Powerade, a Sportaide. And they're typically will be sweetened with dextrose and fructose. And dextrose can be converted readily to glucose and then used as to replace muscle glycogen. Muscle glycogen is the energy substrate we use for anaerobic training or weight training or short burst stuff, like sprints. Fructose is going to play a role, I believe, by the liver, I think the brain, for energy needs. And again, like we have to take care of the must items to live. So we have to check the box and make sure the organs, the brain have what they need, because they're going to take priority over us running the mile faster, us running the 40 faster. But like if just athletic performance, some type of carbs before we train, making sure we're adequately hydrated, making sure we have adequate electrolytes. Post-workout, a liquid carbohydrate and protein within 30 minutes. And then 30 minutes after that, a protein and carbohydrate meal. And I would probably have creatine in there somewhere. I take my creatine with my coffee, and there's a lot of people that would say you shouldn't do that. And then some folks will say caffeine is in coffee and that's a diuretic, blah, 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 whatever. And make sure that I take it, I get my 5 grams every day consistently. So I'll be consistent over ideal, but having creatine post-workout with simple carbohydrates. So the creatine with something sweetened with dextrose post-workout is going to do a lot for recovery. And that would be for the athlete. Somebody that's worried about recovering but wants to lose body fat, it'd probably be a little different. But just talking in terms of athletic performance, I think I would set it up where, assuming they're doing everything else right throughout the day, but some carbs before we train, maybe carbs during the workout, and then carbs and protein after with creatine, and then a carb and protein meal 30 minutes after that.
So go back to the electrolytes. Do you think everyone should be utilizing electrolytes? Like I know people that just, it's almost like their coffee habit. They take electrolytes every single day. And then what electrolytes do you like or do you think are high quality?
Yeah, so I'm first gonna say I don't know the complete answer on that because I haven't gone and read the research. Okay, so that's my first comment. My opinion is many people that eat a higher protein, lower carbohydrate diet might be deficient in electrolytes. If you train in high temperature, high humidity environments, and you're passing a lot of fluid through sweat, or you're drinking a ton of water and you're passing a lot of fluid through urine, those individuals might be short, come up short on the electrolytes. I don't think, like, if you look at some of the really popular, and I won't name one in particular, and we use that one's products. I use it and my kids use it, okay? Is everything that they put out on their website and social media spot on and right for everybody all the time? Probably not. Is it right for an athlete eating a higher protein diet, training regularly, passing a large volume of water through sweat and urine, and with it electrolytes? Probably. But I can't give you the exact numbers because I haven't looked.
Yeah, I do think it's important for people to hear, though, that while they're obviously we're discussing the many benefits of different supplements and there are different things that can be right for different people, but number one, still remembering that this is still a massive money-making market. This is still capitalism, you know, and so there are a lot of things that you may not need that. You may want it, and that's okay, and it's not going to harm you. But there's also a lot that it's meant to be marketable. It's meant to make you think that you need it too.
Right. And there's a business behind it, you know, that the business has to make money or it's going to go out of business. Now, that being said, like with one of the fat loss products, when we discuss lawsuit litigation, and I don't even know if the company's still open or not, but there's a lot of money in this industry. And that individual, now it's hearsay. I didn't go down there to the factory. I didn't look at the guy's car or cars, but supposedly he had a front, the owner of the one company had a Ferrari. So there's real money. I mean, if you look at, oh, and I don't even remember. Well, I'll say this, a lot of the smaller or a lot of the many supplement companies over the last 20 years have been consumed by publicly traded multi-billion dollar pharmaceutical companies. And they wouldn't be consuming those companies like for sales prices in the hundreds of millions of dollars if that company wasn't producing very, very high profit margins. You know, they're buying the cash flow and they're also buying the profits. So there's a lot of money in this space. And there's a lot of people that will do unscrupulous things to make money. Well, our L-carnitine helps with fat loss. So we're going to sell a product that's got 150 milligrams per serving. It's not enough. But if we put enough in there so the people got the benefit, they'd look at the price tag and they wouldn't buy it. Right? So it's, you know, it's hard for the average person to look at it and sort through it. But you can go and look up just like how much XYZ has been shown to produce ABC benefit or outcome. The data is out there. You just got to spend a little time to educate yourself.
Definitely. So the next one that I think is becoming more and more popular, I guess, or I hear about it more and more lately for one reason or another, but gut health. And I know that that can be broad, but I feel like that's a huge marketing term that you hear constantly now. I was even on a company's website 2 days ago looking at a different product, but they have, gut health tests and things like that, and things that are supposed to help. And it's prebiotics, it's probiotics, it's supplements. Do you feel strongly about any of those?
Yeah, there's no question. The health of our gut has a direct impact on our immune system. It directly impacts everything. Because if you think about it, if your gut is unhealthy and it can't do its job, the right nutrition, the right supplements may not matter because you may not absorb the things that you need to. So gut health is extremely important. Prebiotics or probiotics, yes, there's benefit. But again, you need a quality product. I think there's benefit to digestive enzymes for sure. But beyond that, I don't know that there's a lot of products that will matter all that much.
Yeah. It can be a slippery slope, I feel like, too. Like even just having a son with a dairy and egg allergy, and he's not anaphylactic. He has a gut response. Even that's been interesting over the years, and just hearing the different things that people swear will help him or will help his body learn to digest different things and even things of that nature. I think there's so many people out there too that part of the reason I bring it up is, he's dealing with dairy and egg. But there's also a lot of other people that it's gluten, it's, even beers or
So
alcohol.
if you look at dairy, a lot of the part of the dairy intolerance is insufficient enzymes to break the dairy down. So the body's got to do something. So it does things to break down what normally some enzymes would do. And we end up with that gastrointestinal distress. Egg could be similar. And that being said, people with allergies to food, the allergies can change over time. And that, you know, and maybe, and that's what we've always said. And I've never looked up to see if that is medically true. But maybe they change over time because we restore some of the digestive enzymes and our digestive system's healthier, or our quote unquote gut is healthier. And as a result, the intolerance we had is gone because now the systems are healthy and are able to do their jobs the way they're intended. The gluten, a lot of people have an intolerance to gluten. Not everybody that says they do does, but this is something we covered in the past. And as an add-on or an extra piece of conversation, I have a niece that is gluten intolerant, like tested gluten intolerant, type 1 diabetic. It's autoimmune. And we can have a greater conversation of why we see all these autoimmune issues we didn't used to see. But in the case of gluten, ironically, she can have flour, regular flour from Europe. So this begs the question of like, why is it different? My opinion and my suspicion is how they are treating the field and the seed and the crop that gets harvested and turned into flour is different than what we do in North America. And I would suspect the use of glyphosate probably is playing a role, but she can tolerate European flours and whatnot with zero issue. Whereas if she has them here, she has a very, very significant inflammatory response.
You bet. So, is there anything else then that you do recommend for gut health as far as supplements go?
No, I think like, yes, yogurt. Yes, in yogurt would be like a prebiotic, if I remember correctly. Yes, probiotics. We used to be a distributor for one probiotic company, but probiotics, yes, are offer benefit. And then I think digestive enzymes. And I've seen people with gut health issues have them resolved by correcting the gut. In addition to that, like when I was in the 90s and as a kid, I was overweight and I didn't tolerate dairy very well. And when I was in college, like I legit was lactose intolerant. But as I corrected my lifestyle, I changed my exercise habits, I changed my eating habits, the lactose intolerance went away. Now, in fairness, back then, I was eating a half a box of Fruity Pebbles every morning with a half gallon of milk daily. And then I'd be sick an hour later. And if I looked at pizza, I'd get sick. So I would, like, if we got pizza, I'd peel all the cheese off and give it to a friend and just eat the dough and the sauce. Like, today I can have pizza and I don't have an issue. But that being said, I don't eat cereal every day. Like, I never drink milk. And I don't have any of the tolerance issues that I had to dairy from the time I was a kid through college.
A half a box of Fruity Pebbles. I'm impressed, actually. That sounds good right now.
That's how I got fat. Those things are related.
I mean, at least it was good stuff, though, high
Yeah, two
quality.
sleeves of Oreos, half gallon of Kool-Aid. That was breakfast sometimes. Yeah.
All the
Terrible.
good things start with Kool-Aid,
Yeah.
so.
What could be
Okay, so
bad?
next we are going to talk about sleep, and especially how it pertains to recovery. But I do think that it's important to note that there's so much more of an emphasis now, finally, for athletes or anyone with any real goals for their body or their maybe it's a performance-driven goal of any type. I think that there are great conversations now about how important your sleep habits are. And if you truly want to improve your performance, that's a place that you have to be paying attention to, just like hydration, nutrition, everything like that. But when we talk about getting a great quality of sleep, because there's so many people that get obsessed with, I slept 8 hours, I slept 10 hours, I slept 4 hours. So if someone's really looking to have the best quality sleep possible, what supplements do you love for something like that?
So sleep is kind of like it's the reset button. every day. And it's not the duration of sleep, it's the amount of quality sleep. And ZMA, like I had already said, that this does a lot for a lot of people in terms of getting a quality night's sleep. The next products, and one of my former coaches that worked for me, now still coaches and trains and actually runs a training gym down in Franklin, Tennessee. He told me about these. These were on Huberman's podcast at some point, Andrew Huberman. And I just bought them and I take them most nights. And I can't tell you the specific mechanics about this, but I can tell you that when I take these products, I wake up having had a more restful night's sleep. So magnesium L-threonate, there's more than one version of magnesium, but magnesium L-threonate, apigenin, and then L-theanine or L-theanine, however you say it. I can't give you the amounts because I haven't looked at them. So I take three of the ZMA. I can give you that one. It's three a night. And then I usually take one of each of these and I sleep better. And that's 100% opinion piece. I did go and find the Huberman podcast where he talked about it. And to be honest, I never even listened to it. But I do seem to get a higher quality sleep when I take those.
Okay,
And sleep's
perfect.
the reset button, right? Like if there's so many things that go back over our evolution, like just your circadian rhythm. And that's why like people with sleep apnea, which I have severe sleep apnea will impair cardiac function. Because like again, the quality sleep's a magic reset.
So for someone that is maybe dealing with something that is more cortisol related when it comes to sleep problems. How can they identify if something might be more cortisol related? And then what can they do to still help themselves?
So the cortisol related is probably going to be more. This is my guess in my opinion, and this isn't going to be supported by any data that I know of because I haven't looked at the data. But cortisol related sleep issues are probably going to fall more with females, so it'll be along gender lines. And if you're finding yourself waking up between like 2:30 and 3 a.m., it's probably be going to be because your cortisol is elevated. And we see that in middle-aged women. And what's happening is cortisol dips mid-afternoon and they find themselves tired in the afternoon. And then it spikes at 2:30, 3 in the morning, and they're wide awake. And the way to determine that, kind of like we covered in the menopause podcast, is to go see a female practitioner that specializes in women's health and get a 24-hour cortisol saliva test. And that will verify if indeed you're seeing the fluctuations of cortisol in an inverted fashion, meaning where cortisol should be high, it's low, and where it should be low, it's high. But most likely, not for everybody, but I would say the majority of women that are waking up at 2, 2:30, 3 in the morning, wide awake, it's probably related to cortisol.
Okay. And cortisol in general can also be related to someone's stress levels and coping mechanisms, or do you typically only see it come up on a person's chart, I guess, if it's related more to menopause?
Well, I think anything's gonna be related to stress, and the more stress you have, the more the human body is gonna be impaired when it comes to proper, normal, healthy function.
Definitely. So you talked a lot about protein and powders and shakes and how you can help yourself there. Is there anything else? And we talked about that being an addition, a boost. You still need to put in the work, things like that. Are there things that you love for meal replacement, or do you feel like there's nothing that can
I
replace a
mean,
meal? Don't waste your time.
there used to be a way that they classified a supplement as a meal replacement. It's kind of gone by the wayside because protein, like everybody just refers to shakes as protein shakes. But I think a true meal replacement wouldn't be mostly protein and very little carbohydrates or fat. It'd probably be a combination. But I think like if you want a meal replacement, have a protein shake and a piece of fruit. Have a protein shake and a bagel, right? And call it a day and move on.
Give me some of the things that you wish everyone was doing, and then some of the greatest mistakes that you see people making.
I think make life easy, buy a quality protein powder and use it as a way to supplement your whole food dietary protein. That's probably the biggest thing. Things that I would like to see people quit doing is stop looking at supplements in the supplement industry is the end all be all. Like you still have to do the work. Like you have to do the work in the kitchen, you have to do the work at the grocery store, you have to do the work when dining out. And you got to put the time in the gym under the bar, right? You got to exercise. And you're not going to spend money and supplement your way out of that. That's probably the biggest thing.
I always feel like, especially with steroids in particular, but it's the same conversation around supplements. I think that there is a misconception that with steroids or supplements, that if you're doing those things, it's a magic switch. You know, all of these things happen for you if you're doing those things. But even with something as strong as a steroid by comparison to supplements, you still have to put in that work. And nothing works unless you do, is the saying,
Right.
right? But that's so important for people to hear. And that's also where people can draw a line of, do I really need this too? If you're not training at a certain level, if you're not programming well, if you're not working with someone that's really making sure you're on your stuff, you could be wasting money too.
Yeah, there's a lot of the products people are buying. Like I'll get that. I'll intake a new client and she'll share everything she's taking. And there will be a lot of the things that the ingredients in a product might make sense, but the amount she's taken isn't remotely close to the amount shown in research to produce a result. So you have a choice. Start taking a lot more of it or save your money, don't buy it again, right? Finish the product out. It's not hurting anything. You're just not going to get the benefit. So I see a lot of that. And even if they are doing the work, like they're buying products they don't need, or they're buying products that aren't in line with what their goals are, or they're buying products that straight up have been shown not to work.
Yeah. So, last thing then, and I think that this will be a fun glimpse into how you work with your clients and how you're able to help guide them in their decision making. So, I do think that one thing that would be really cool for the listeners to hear is how you would go about recommending certain supplements to an individual with very specific goals. So, we're going to use me as a case study. I'm 36 years old. I have two beautiful babies, so not a lot of time. I work. I'm training for a marathon. I do have some pretty serious joint pain. Part of it's from having a torn meniscus right now. And what else? What else do I want to accomplish? And I would like better quality of sleep because I tend to be a 4 a.m. wake up. So what supplements do you want me taking to try to have
So
feeling as good as possible?
for sleep, ZMA, and then you could Google the Andrew Huberman L-theanine, apigenin, and magnesium L-threonate. For the joint pain, glucosamine, chondroitin, hyaluronic acid, and MSM, I'd have a protein and carbohydrate shake after I ran, and that would probably and then a collagen protein. And that would probably check each of the boxes with each of the concerns you had.
Okay. And do you think that all of those things, budget-wise, are pretty manageable for most people to be taking?
Yes. Like if I was looking to run 26 miles and I was going to invest like $100, maybe $150 a month, to me it would be worth it. Because I like if I'm going to go through the effort to get ready to run a 26.2 mile race, I want to make sure that I finish. So I would be making sure that I left no stone unturned, and I would make sure that I was putting myself in a position and was prepared to complete the race.
Absolutely. And recognizing that that's where supplements have so much power. That's why it's a billion-dollar industry, right? Like you really can set yourself up to feel better, to stay active, to capitalize on what your body is already giving you and love it back a little bit too, if you do it the right way.
That's right. That's right.
Well, perfect. Well, I'm ready. So thank you so
Cool.
much, Ray. This was great.
If you like our content, be sure to subscribe to our channel. Leave us a comment below. Also, be sure to check us out on your favorite podcast provider. See the links in the description below.